Okay, today is Wednesday, November 27th. This is the Women's Chumash Shiur. We are up to Bereishit Perek Yudchet. Once again, focusing on Psukim Chaf, Chaf Aleph, and Chaf Bet. Okay, Rabotai. Rabotai. Okay, Rabotai. We are in Bereishit Perek Yudchet. We're in the middle of Psukim Chaf Aleph, Chaf, Chaf Aleph, and then we'll see Chaf Bet. And several critical issues, one which Rashi cites, of which there are 18 such examples throughout Tanakh, and spark one of the major debates. And Rashi obviously subscribes to one side of the opinion. But before we do that, if you remember the psukim themselves state, Vayomer Hashem Zaakat Sidom Vamaro Ki Rabba Vechatatam Ki Chavda Ma'od. Erdana said HaKadosh Baruch Hu Ve'era, I'm going to go check it out. Hakza'akata Haba Eilai Asu Kala. And the way we've interpreted thus far is that we take a pause after the word asu, because there is a line there which indicates take a pause. It's called a psik. Psik means to stop a little. And the way to read it is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to see if asu, if they did what I suspect they did, then kala means I will destroy them. I will destroy them. The imlo, and if they have not been guilty of what I think they've been guilty of, a da'a, I will know what to do with them. So we pointed out there were a variety of interpretations. We'll operate with the simple one, that God will operate with midat harachamim. If he decides, if he notices that it's not as bad as the screaming that he hears, he will not employ midat hadin and destroy all of them, but rather some degree of yisurin, din with rachamim. Din with rachamim. That was the standard interpretation. Standard interpretation. Yeah. Whoa. Here you go. Do you have it right now? No? Okay. Fine. However, Sfarno chooses to read the text without the psik. Without it. So take a look at page number one. And Sfarno writes on the bottom of the right hand side of the page, Asu Kala. He says the word Kala means not that I'm going to destroy them. It says if Asu Kula, Asu Kulam, She'ein Beinehem Moche. Everybody, I'm going to see if everybody is guilty. That's what HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going down for. I'm going to see Haktzakata Ba'ilai Asu Kala, if everybody did it. Kula. Whether you are actually guilty of the actual crime or not, but you didn't protest. V'ein Moche. So if you don't protest, HaKadosh Baruch Hu considers it as if what? As if you actually did it. As if you went ahead and went to a family that decided to be nice to a guest. So you didn't say anything, and someone was torturing them, and you didn't say anything. Let them go ahead and service this guest. You are just as guilty as they are. It's right. It's not. Shtika Kodav is usually in a halakhic, in a court sense. So I'll give you the pasuk upon which this is based, and it's one of the unique features of Am Yisrael. Please open up to Vayikra chapter 19. Vayikra 19. It's the middle of Parshat Kedoshim, Pasuk 19, and the Pasuk is 15. Perek Yutet, Pasuk Tet Zayin. Pasuk Tet Zayin. Lo Telech Rachil Ba'amecha, Lo Ta'amod Al Dam Reyacha. In our perspective, you don't have to legislate, you don't have to talk about a good Samaritan. Everybody has to be a good Samaritan. Nobody is allowed to stand around if somebody else is in danger. Not allowed to. There is only one state in the United States that has this as law, the state of Oregon. You can be punished by state law if you witness someone in danger and fail to respond appropriately. Only the state of Ireland. We have that built in, and they stole it from us, of course. We have it built into the Chumash. Lo ta'amod al dam reyacha. So the Gemara gives several illustrations. If you see somebody drowning and you know how to swim, you have an obligation to try to save somebody. The question is, how much do you have to put yourself in danger in order to save somebody else? How much do you have to put yourself in danger? The halacha of rodev is based on this particular halacha. A rodev. I am running after somebody to kill them, and you have a gun in your hand. What is your biblical obligation? Shoot me! Because I am pursuing somebody to kill them. You have no right to stand by idly. So if you have a gun, you have an obligation to shoot me. And if you don't shoot me, Besdin will prosecute you for failing to save my intended victim. So,
yeah, but how do you know the victim is? How do you know the victim is really the victim?
What do you mean? I'm running after somebody. I'm running after them, where it's abundantly evident.
Yeah.
And it makes no difference. I'm running after a gun. Who cares who the victim is?
Yeah, what if that person killed somebody
else? Right. Yeah, he's trying to capture him.
Killed somebody in his family.
If he's running after somebody who killed
him. Killed somebody in his family.
So but that's for a court to decide.
Yeah,
so,
but you can't shoot the other person.
I know. But under no circumstances does a person have a right to take the law into his or her own hands. Only if you're the Goel Hadam, which doesn't happen very frequently, where somebody killed and didn't go to Arei Miklat. We don't have Arei Miklat today. Yes?
Isn't that also why sometimes you get an active abortion?
What?
When you get an active abortion, it's not for the life, because life is in danger, they say the baby's in danger.
That is correct. That's correct. That's the Rambam's expression. That the baby is Rodef Achar Imo. If the mother's life is in danger, that is correct.
But if you're saying that you can't take the judgment into your own hands, you have to wait for a court. The man running after him with a gun is making a judgment to shoot. You said he should shoot the
guy with the rodev.
I know, but
because that's what the Torah is telling you, the rodev has no right to take a life, even if the person who he's running after took a member of your family's life.
He has no right.
He has no right. to take your life. And therefore, we have to assume he has a presumed innocence, and therefore the intended victim, is entitled to protection. Here, it has not a serious consequences, but any time you see a wrong taking place, our responsibility is to respond. So it's to respond in action based on lota amod al dam re'echa, and even if it means just to speak to them, look at Pasuk Yud Zayin, right there, the next Pasuk in Parshat Kedoshim. Lo tisna et achicha bevavecha, hocheach tochiach et amisecha. Say something at least. You don't know if they're going to listen. But we have a responsibility, whenever you see somebody acting inappropriately, we have a responsibility to engage in the mitzvah of tochecha. Obviously, there are laws and guidelines how to do it. Doesn't mean you scream it at them. You know, you should say it nicely, politely, and so on and so forth. There is a Gemara, how to tell your parents if they're doing something wrong. You know, how a child is supposed to correct his Rebbe if he's doing something wrong. And a parent, it happens very often, you know, especially if you have the child who is a lot more knowledgeable, and the parents, you know, are being Michal Shabbos. There is a way to say it, and there's a way to say it. But to do nothing is something that we don't tolerate. Says Svarno, Asu Kula, everybody is in the city of Sodom is guilty as charged. Those who were cruel to guests, and those who did nothing about those who reacted to punish those who were hospitable to guests in Sodom. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu treats it the same way. And here is just 1 second. There is a famous Chakira. When you are lo ta'amod al dam re'echa, you see somebody drowning, and you do nothing, absolutely nothing. So some say that you violate lo ta'amod al dam re'echa. Okay? The Torah says don't stand by idly. Others go way beyond that. They say that God considers it as if you were the murderer. If you allow somebody to be murdered, God treats it as if you murdered somebody. If you could have avoided it, if you could have done something, and it's much worse to be guilty of lo tirtzach, do not murder, than it is to be guilty of lo tamod al dam re'acha. Lo dam re'acha is a passive law. I did nothing. But once you are passive, many Rishonim believes you are up in your book upstairs, you are charged as if you murdered that victim. You murdered that victim. Not the guy with the gun. By standing by, you were the murderer. You were the murderer. If somebody is drowning in the pool, you get considered as if you murdered that guy, not the water, not he drowned. It's as if you pushed him underneath. So it's a very serious approach of communal responsibility. Says Svarno, that's what's happening here. There was no communal sensitivity, and therefore HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, Asu Kala. Do not stop. Do not pause after the word Asu. It's Asu Kala. It's a very nice, important idea, but it's not the pshat in the pasuk. Because the word, the God, Torah, knows how to say the word everybody. What's the word for everybody? Kulam. Asu Kulam. Not Asu Kala. That the Kala with a hey means to destroy. Kliya means destruction. Not. Bar mitzvah, like everything else. Every other mitzvah of the Torah. Bar or bat mitzvah. Yes. Bar or bat mitzvah.
Excuse me.
Yes?
Is this only for Israeli, for people who are Jewish, or if you see something going wrong,
it depends what they're engaging. If you see a guy running after somebody to kill him, you have a responsibility to save that Gentile victim also. Because a Gentile is obligated to observe Lo Tirtzach. It's one of the Sheva Mitzvot B'nei Noach. And we have a responsibility to promote Sheva Mitzvot B'nei Noach. so I necessarily have to go ahead. I know that there are certain areas where the halacha discriminates between Jew and Gentile. I am aware of that. It's very troubling to people who have a sense of moral sensitivity. The primary example is whether I'm obligated to be Michal Shabbos to save somebody's life. Yeah. Not that there's a threat, not that someone's running after him. He's had a heart attack.
Yeah.
Can I save him or not? So technically the Gemara says you can't. And however, you cannot save him unless it's going to lead to Eva, Aleph Yud Bet Hey, which means there will be a reciprocal thing. Doctors in the hospital will say, we're not saving Jews anymore because they don't want to save us. So if it's going to lead to Eva, you're allowed to do it, but it's not morally or ethically satisfying. Right? So, I'll just tell you two things. When we were when I was in the Rav Shir in 72, the Rav learned Masech HaShabbos, and we came across the sugya of Pikuach Nefesh, and somebody brought that up to the Rav, and he said, we were shocked. He said, I would be Michal Shabbos, and I'll bring my case directly to the Rabbeinu Shel Olam. That's what he said. Now, that is a brave thing to say, but you can say that about anything. I'm not going to follow the halacha, and I'll take it up with the Rabbeinu Shalom directly. So, we all knew that us mortals can't make a statement like that, but the Rav, he had very broad shoulders, and he felt that he could defend himself against the critique of the Rabbeinu Shalom as to why he violated the halacha and was Michal Shabbos. But we were like shocked. And it happened in an event in Bnei Brak. That's what triggered it. A guy was driving a motorcycle on Rehov Rabbi Akiva, which is the main drag in Bnei Brak, and he smashed into a light pole. And everybody stood around, did absolutely nothing. And Ma'ariv, the newspaper, all the left-wing news, went crazy attacking all the Dati people for doing absolutely nothing to save this Arab from dying. He died. And so the Rav commented and he said, I could not stand by. So Rav Aaron Lichtenstein once offered at least some degree of logic to explain the Gemara's position. If I asked you, what is the pasuk upon which our obligation to save a life in any situation, what pasuk is that based on? No. No. What that I? No, no. What's my response? Goes well beyond lo tamo. Good. V'chai b'hem. So open up to chapter 18 of Sefer Vayikra. And it's pasuk Gimel or Dalud. Hey, okay. Pasuk Yud Chet. Perek Yud Chet. Pasuk Hey. Ushmartem et chukutai vet mishpadeshi aser atzom dam. Vachai bahem. The mitzvot are designed to promote life, not to promote death. So you're allowed to violate any mitzvah of the Torah with the exception of the big three. You can't kill to save your own hide. You can't engage in sexual immorality, and you can't engage in idolatry in order to save a life. You can't. But everything else goes. What? Now, this doesn't say Jews. This says v'chai b'hem. Everybody should live. However, in the Gemara, there is a second opinion as to why you're allowed to desecrate the Shabbat in order to save a life. A second explanation. And it's based on another pasuk in the Chumash, which we recite every Friday night in Davening Maariv, and we recite it Shabbos morning in Shmon Esrei. V'shamru b'nei Yisrael et ha-Shabbat. There's a comma there. La'asot et ha-Shabbat v'dovotam b'rit olam. So the Gemara darshins take away the comma. V'shamru b'nei Yisrael at Shabbat la'asot. Comma right there. Observe the Shabbos in order to do it. Says the Gemara, Chalel alav Shabbat achat, kidei sheyishmor Shabbatot harbei. Desecrate one Shabbos so that you can promote life, and he'll observe multiple Shabbatot. Very nice. So Rav Aaron asked, why does the Gemara need a special derivation to teach me that I'm allowed to be mechal Shabbos? Why isn't for Chai Bahem enough? So I don't need a special one to tell me that you're allowed to eat non-kosher meat. If the doctor says you need meat and there's no kosher meat around, you give him non-kosher meat. Why do I need a special derivation to teach me that I am not, that I'm permitted to be mechal Shabbos, to promote Shabbat life? So he said, because in several areas of halacha, Shmirat Shabbat is compared to idolatry. To idolatry. In what way? If a Jewish idolater invites you to their house for Shabbat, are you allowed to eat there?
No.
No, you can't. Tell me why you're not allowed to eat there. Even though you know for a fact he bought all of his stuff in Meal Mart. Not the Meal Mart. He bought all the stuff in Meal Mart. You're not allowed to go. Tell me what? Tell me why. Because an idolater has forfeited his halachic trustworthiness in all areas of Jewish law. All areas of Jewish law. So if he tells me that the garment that he's selling me is not shakmeis, I can't believe him. If he's telling me the food that he's serving, I can't trust him. The Gemara says the same thing about the Chal Shabbos. It's one of the more sensitive and delicate issues in our community. I get this question all the time. I have a next door neighbor, wonderful people, and they're not Shomrei Shabbat. You know, they go to Temple Emeth. They go to Temple Emeth.
They drive.
A reform shul. They drive, or they walk. They go to Temple Emeth. And we invited them for lunch, and now they're reciprocating. Can we go? I told them you can't go. Not allowed. Not because they're not trustworthy. They can be the most honest and trustworthy person on the planet. But halakhically, they have forfeited all of their trustworthiness when they are on the Chalel Shabbat. It's the only two Aveirot. If somebody doesn't eat matzah on Pesach, they eat chametz on Pesach, and then they invite you for a meal, you're not eating it. Because just because you eat chametz doesn't mean you forfeited halakhic trustworthiness vis-a-vis kashrut. It's only Avodah Zarah and Shabbos. The only two. That's why the first question that you ask is, are they Shomer Shabbos? That's the only question you have to ask.
Oh.
Not to ask, do they go to the mikveh? Do they observe Shatnez? Do they observe Pesach? Not to ask that question. One question, are they Shomer Shabbos or not? Hopefully we don't have to ask, are they idolaters? I don't think, because people today know that they're not idolaters.
Is believing in Jesus as the Son of God an idolatry?
Okay, that's a different question. That's a different question. So anyhow, so since the Gemara compares the two, I could have thought that just as you're not allowed to violate the law of idolatry to save somebody's life, what else are you not allowed to violate to save someone's life? Chilul Shabbos. Could have thought. That's why the Gemara needs a second explanation. Even though I normally would compare Shabbat to Avodah Zarah, the Gemara is telling us, do not operate with that logic. And there is a special derivation. V'shamru b'nei Yisrael et ha-Shabbat la'asot. Desecrate one Shabbat in order to promote many Shabbatot. Said Rav Aaron, without this, what would I have said? Are you allowed to desecrate the Shabbos even to save a Jew? No. You couldn't desecrate a Shabbat, just like you can't desecrate Avodah Zarah and Gilui Arayos and Shlichus Damim to save a Jew. You can't. So what's the only reason why we're allowed to save another Jew? What's the only reason? To promote what?
Shabbat.
Shmirat Shabbat. Does the Dai observe Shabbat?
No.
So I can't desecrate the Shabbat because it's not for the purpose of promoting the observance of other Shabbatot. So at least there's some halakhic structure and logic to the halakha based on Rav Aaron's interpretation. It's some halakhic going on. I have to recognize that without this, I could not, if somebody had a heart attack in shul, we could not call Hatzot. We can't call teenage ambulance call. Have to let him die. But, except for the fact, v'shamru b'nei Yisrael at the Shabbat. But v'chai b'hem would not have been enough. No.
Very difficult.
It's very difficult, but I'm just trying to offer, I know it comes up, some halakhic perspective to give us some basis for it. Yes.
Okay. Because if somebody's saved, I've heard this before, all of a sudden they turn and they could say, I want to do Shmirat Shabbat. So mm-hmm. What if you're saving that person's life, they're not Shmirat Shabbat, but it will turn into Shmirat Shabbat.
So by a Jew we do that.
Oh, what do you can't?
Let's assume this guy was a Mechal Shabbos. This Jew is a Mechal Shabbos.
Oh, you still can.
Of course you can, because next Shabbos he might observe. A Gentile doesn't have to observe Shabbat.
But no matter.
He might, but for might deciding to convert, we're not doing that. Yes. Has nothing to do with it. The Rav didn't use that logic. The Rav said, I know that it's Asur. But I would do it anyhow, because I could not stand by watching a human life expire. I could not stand by innocently while watching a human life expire. I couldn't. That's what the Rav said. It's a dangerous statement to make, but it made an enormous impact on me and the other 120 guys in the shul. I was guided. I and all most of the guys in the shul said, if the Rav is telling us this, he's telling us this because he wants to set an example. I didn't think he looked to say it because he wanted to brag or anything like that. His actions speak volumes. Speak volumes. That's what a Rebbe has to be aware of. That his actions to do A or B and not C and D speak volumes. 100%. It's one of his... Good. So that's point number one. Point number two, I want to show you, is a Rashi that we just glanced over, but I want to focus on it today. It's in Pasuk Chaf Bet. In Yud Chet, where else? Back to Bereishis. Yes. Now, this particular pasuk is standing out like a sore thumb. Standing out. The flow of the psukim has been the following. If you go back to Tet Zion for a minute. At the end of Tet Vav, the first mission was accomplished. Sarah was told she's having a baby, she didn't believe it, she laughed, they challenged her, and she said, I didn't laugh. End of unit. That's it. Now the Torah reports something. Vayakumu misham ha'anashim. The angels, the people, are now off to mission number two. Vayashkifu al pnei Sodom. and they gaze upon Sodom. For Avraham, holech imam l'shalcha. Avraham went with what? With them to what? To escort them, like a good host does. He provides livia, escort. Good. Now the Torah interrupts their mission. V'Hashem Omar, HaKadosh Baruch Himself said, HaMechaseh ani me'Avraham Hashem Yoseh, am I going to withhold that information from Avraham? Very nice. Now the Torah has another editor's remark. You know who Abe was? He was a really good guy. And he's going to be a great nation. Why is he going to be a great nation? Because I know he's going to tell his children not to do what the people of Sodom are doing. Therefore, can I withhold this information from Avraham? HaMechase ani me'Avraham? Good. So, what's the next pasuk that should happen? So now, HaKadosh Baruch Hu should be talking to Avraham and say what? Oh, Abe, this is what's going to happen. And that's what happens. Vayomer Hashem. Remember Rashi noted that it doesn't say to whom HaKadosh Baruch Hu is talking. Vayomer Hashem. To whom? The inference is, of course he's talking to Avraham. Because he was with Avraham before all of these interruptions took place. That was the beginning of the parsha. HaKadosh Baruch Hu came to visit Avraham. Very nice. And he now tells Avraham, I am going to Asukala. I'm going to destroy them. So what should have been the next pasuk? Just flowing, but without the inter. What should have been the next pasuk? Vayigash Avraham. And Avraham says, Vayomar, have to. Now comes the plea of Avraham. That's exactly why HaKadosh Baruch Hu shared it with Avraham. Because he anticipated that if I tell him about it, he, as a shining example of a commitment to morality and ethics and decency, he would object that the righteous fall together with the innocent, with the guilty. But there is an interrupting pasuk. Vayifnu misham ha'anashim, vayelchu sedoma, v'Avraham odeno omed lifnei Hashem. So, forget about what this pasuk means. It seems to be a little repetitive.
No, it goes back to speak.
Good, but it, good, exactly. Good, but it said that Avraham already left to escort the people.
So we went with them.
So HaKadosh Baruch Hu went with them. Okay, HaKadosh Baruch Hu went with Avraham to escort them. We don't know what happened to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but perhaps
he's still there.
Where is HaKadosh Baruch Hu? Where is he? Is he still in the house? Is Avraham still in the house with HaKadosh Baruch Hu?
Yes.
How do you know? It does say, I read that first pasuk. It says in 16, Ve'Avram holeich imahem lishalcham. So Avram left his house to escort them. Okay, where is HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the interim? No, it says that he came down to speak. He didn't go back up. Because I know when he goes back up. The last three words of the chapter, Perek Yud Chet, says, Vayelech Hashem. God left. But apparently he didn't leave till then. So where is HaKadosh Baruch Hu at this time? Either he's in Avram's Ohel alone, which is a little unusual. But we're speaking as if Avram is one of you and me. I mean, HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He came to visit. We have to track his whereabouts. Because the Torah makes a point of telling that he left. Vayelech Hashem. Assumption is, until that pasuk, he's still there. We don't know that yet. So there are two possibilities. After Avram went to what? To escort them. Well, he didn't escort them the whole way to Sodom. Where did he escort them? Just the amount of halachic space. Let's say it's a mile. That's what you're supposed to do. Ad parsa. 1 mile. You don't got to escort the guy to the next world. So then what did Avram do after he escorted? Went back to his house. The Rabbi Nishonim was still there. Or possibility number two, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu felt a little uncomfortable staying in the house alone. He didn't want to be alone with Sarah in the house. So it was an Isser Yichud. So he accompanied them as well. HaKadosh Baruch Hu went along. Then the three angels took off on their own. Avram standing there, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu's with him. So either of the two, the Pasuk now states, Vayifnu Misham Ha'anoshim. Now where's the Misham? Where are they leaving? You can say his house, but they'd already told me that they left. It says that they left already. And that Avram escorted them part of the way. So Misham can't be from the house. So Rashi says from the place where he escorted them. Fine. The Avraham Odenu Omeid Lifnei Hashem. So Rashi and the Pasuk support that where was HaKadosh Baruch Hu at this time? Yeah. Not in the house, but in the place to where he what?
Escorted.
He escorted him. Very nice. And the Pasuk tells us Avram is still standing in the presence of God. Says Rashi, Vashem Odenu Omeid Al Avraham. No, excuse me. Rashi says, Haya lo lichtov vahashem odeno omeid al Avraham. It should have said that God had not checked out. And that God is still waiting next to Avraham. Waiting to see what? What's God waiting for? If he's going to say something. After all, I just told him what's going to happen. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu was waiting on Avraham to see what reaction is. Says Rashi, that's a terrible thing to say about God. God's waiting around for Avraham to make a decision? That's the way you speak it about the Rabbi Nishon? He's waiting around? Says, hold on a second. It should have, if the reality was that God was waiting, it should have said, "Vahashem omeid, odeno omeid al Avraham." So what happens? Elotikun sofrim huzeh. The sofrim made a change in the text, and they write, "Shahafchuhu rabosenu lichtov kein." The rabbis felt compelled to what? To change the text. That it's not right to say God is waiting for anybody. And what did they write? Avraham Odenu Omeid Lifnei Hashem. So I want to spend a few minutes about this idea called Tikkun Sofrim. Tikkun Sofrim. There are two possibilities to interpret the phrase. Possibilities to interpret the phrase. One is, as I just explained it, tikkun means they corrected, they made a change. Due to the fact that they found something intolerable based on the simple reading of the text. Intolerable. And I'll give you another example. If you go to page number 4 for a minute. I know it's hard to read, but I couldn't blow it up for some reason. The machine didn't let me. Okay. This commentary called Minchas Shai is a commentary on all of Tanakh that focuses on accurate Masoretic texts. It'll tell you every single time there's supposed to be a kri and a ktiv. A ktiv and a kri means it's written one way in the Torah text, but you don't read it that way. There are many words in the Torah that are not sounded the way it's written in the text. And in your chumash, it'll say kri and ktiv, so you shouldn't get disturbed. There are words which are mole and chaser. The same word could be written with a vav and without a vav. Or no yud. So take the name of Aharon. Take the name of Yankala, Yaakov. 99.999% of the time, it says Yaakov and Aharon without a vav. It's Aleph, Hey, Resh, Nun. Yud, Ayin, Kuf, Bet. Once in the Torah text, it says V'zacharti et briti Yaakov. There's a vav in the text. So this Mincha Shai, it gives you every single such example in the text and the reason why it might appear there. In his commentary to Trei Asar, in the book of Zechariah, here the Mincha Shai lists all of the 18 Tikkun Sofrim that are throughout the entire Torah, Tanakh, throughout the entire Tanakh. Out the entire Tanakh. He comments on the pasuk in Zechariah chapter 12, verse 2, which says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, anybody who will lay a hand on Am Yisrael, it says, if you poking my eye out, nogea bebat eini. The Sofrim said, that's not a nice thing to say, that somebody's going to poke out the eyes of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So they changed it from eini to eino. Anybody who starts up with Am Yisrael, or others say it refers to a different type of scenario, it's with HaKadosh Baruch Hu is angry at Bnei Yisrael because they are not faithful, and some of Bnei Yisrael said, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, take me on. It's okay. We're going to continue to not be faithful. So anybody who starts up with me, it's as if what? You're poking my eye out. They didn't think that's a nice thing to say. So they changed it from Eini to Eino. Anybody who starts with me, it's as if you poked out your own eye. That's what the Sofrim did. So Rashi believes that they actually made a change in the text, which is astounding. How can a human being take on the gall, the audacity, to change the text authored by the Holy One, blessed be He? Now in Zechariah, HaKadosh Baruch Hu did not necessarily say those words. He could have. But in Nevi'im, the Navi gets the inspiration of the idea from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but then he formulates it in his own poetic manner. But you can't say that about Bereshit chapter Yudchet. That is authored by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And take a look at page 5 for just a moment. I photostatted from the Siddur the 13 Ani Ma'amins. Now we only sing the last one, or the 12th one, B'vias HaMashiach Ani Ma'amin. But there are 12 others. And the 6th and 7th make the following, the 7th or the 8th and the 9th. The 8th and the 9th. Ani Ma'amin, and these are all from the Rambam. The Rambam writes this in Hilchot Deot, that anybody who does not believe in these 13 things is an apikores and has forfeited Olam Haba. That's what the Rambam writes. If you don't believe in all 13, you forfeit Olam Haba. Ani Ma'amin b'nevuat b'emunah shlema. Shekol haTorah haMitzuya ata biyadenu, the entire Torah that we find in our homes, He hanetuna l'Moshe Rabbeinu alav hashalom. That it represents the exact same Sefer Torah which Moshe Rabbeinu received from Har Sinai, from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And number 9, Ani ma'amin be'emunah shleima shezot ha-Torah lo tehe mukhlefet. It can never be changed.
Replaced
or changed. Nothing. V'lo tehe Torah acheret me'et ha-borei yitbarach shemo. That God's never going to author another Sefer Torah. The one that we have is here for good. So if the Rambam were asked about Tikkun Sofrim, he would say, I don't believe that that's the pshat of Tikkun Sofrim. I don't believe it. But Rashi says it, that the Sofrim made 18 changes in the course of Tanakh because they were uncomfortable the way it read. The way it read.
What is the Rambam?
Okay, so I'm going to show you the second possibility. Yes.
What about the Aleppo Codex?
What?
The Aleppo Codex.
What about it?
So there are different versions.
No, that's only because mistakes happen. Don't forget, every single Sefer Torah was written by hand. And a sofer makes mistakes. Even though no Sefer Torah can be written by looking at anything but a Sefer Torah. If you go to Cedar Lane, right over there to the sofa, if he's writing a Sefer Torah, he'll have an open Sefer Torah, and he looks everywhere, sees the word now. Now how can he write something in the next Sefer Torah, and it doesn't come? Because he made a mistake. Your mind's busy. You write the wrong letter. You write the wrong word. There are Sifrei Torah and Shul that have extra words, missing words. Okay, we don't. We don't. So the Rambam believed the Aleppo Codex Sefer Torah in Aleppo, Spain, which the Rambam calls the Keter in Syria, which is called the Keter of Aram Tzova, was the most accurate Sefer Torah ever written. And the Rambam writes, when I fulfilled my mitzvah of writing a Sefer Torah, I went to Aleppo and I copied it word for word from the codex, from the Keter of the Syrian community. What happened was that before Medinat Yisrael, there was a fire. Somebody started a fire where the Keter was stored, and a good part of it was destroyed. There were fragments left, and those fragments were brought to Eretz Yisrael. And then you go to various museums, the Israel Museum number 1 in the hall of the shrine of the hall, the hall of the shrine,
shrine of the book.
You can see fragments of the codex. There are rumors circulating that the fire was set as a cover up. It was taken by a variety of Syrian Jews who wanted to keep it for themselves, because initially the plan was to transfer the whole thing to Medinat Yisrael, and that in Flatbush on Avenue S someplace where there is lots of Syrians, that's where the Aleppo Keter is actually found. That's what some people claim. But mistakes here, we're not talking about a mistake by the Tikkun Sofrim. But the Rambam acknowledges that there are mistakes, but nobody actively changed it. The Tikkun Sofrim, the way Rashi understands it, is no, but there was no mistake. It said what it said. It said, Vahashem Odenu Omeid al Avraham. That's what it said. And they erased it and said, Va'avraham Odenu Omeid al Hashem. Yes.
When all 70 people sat in different rooms and they translated the Torah.
Good. That was a translation, not the written text. So there the miracle was that they all translated everything, even if it was not consistent with the written text, they all translated it the same fashion. Correct. But no one ever said that they changed the written text. Now, the Rashba, yes?
sequence offering, when did that take place?
Okay, that's good. Some people claim it was the Anshei Knesset Agdola, the men of the Great Assembly. Somebody, Ibn Ezra says, nothing, I don't believe in any of this. Of Tikkun Sofrim, I want to at least show you the Rashba's statement. The Rashba is found in a tshuva on page number 3. Rashba, Shlomo ben Aderet. He's the number one student of the Ramban. He wrote an enormous amount. We have 4,000 tshuvos of the Rashba. 4,000 tshuvos. Print. We never had them. They were found, manuscripts were found relatively recently, within the last 100 years, and they've been published. They're right up there on the top of the top shelf over there. Tshuvos HaRashba. He lived in Spain, and if you go to, I'm not sure which city it was, Barcelona someplace, you can visit the bakery of the Rashba, where he baked matzahs for Pesach. It's still around, because it was a famous bakery. Apparently he made good 7-layer cake. So the Rashba, and he wrote Chidushim on all of Shas. So he was a prolific writer, and the number one student of the Ramban. And he writes, V'hinini kotvan, I'm going to write my opinion, k'day she'is bonein kol ben da'at bahen, so anybody was a measure of intelligence, v'im yesh shum safek, and if there was any doubt, what I believe in, b'mesha amarti. V'chein katuv shav, yud chet dvarim kituvim b'mikra, v'einam kituvim k'tikun. There are 18 things that are written in the text, and are not written properly. V'chachme Yisrael korin otam tikun sofrim. Everybody calls these things tikun sofrim. Lo shetiknu otan shemachaku v'katvu. Do not believe for a half a second that this is what happened. They actually wrote it, erased it, and wrote it. Elamash katav Moshe Rabbeinu al Hashon b'Torah u'mash katvu hanavim b'shar sfarim mitchila. The author of the text knew that he's not writing it seriously. So when God, the author of the Torah, writes, "VaHashem, vaAvraham, odena omed al Hashem," he expects us to assume what should have been written. Hashem omed al Avraham. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu knew that what? That's not a right thing to write about myself. And hence, I wrote the Avraham odeno omed al Hashem, and the Sofrim are the ones who exposed my intention. But never was there a change in the text.
Is that what Rambam believes?
That's what the Rambam would have to believe in. Yes. It is very possible that the Rashba was inspired by the Rambam to disagree with Rashi and all the others. The Rashba had enormous respect for the Rambam. And if he sees that the Rambam writes that the Torah that is in your shul and in my shul is the exact same Sefer Torah that Moshe Rabbeinu received from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that may have convinced the Rashba that tikkun sofrim is not what the word means, tikkun litakein. Tikkun means they corrected our false understanding of what the text means. But the text was never tampered with. But Rashi doesn't believe that. Rashi believes that the sofrim made a change. And it's a little difficult to come to grips. How can a human being, even if he is a member of the Anshei Knesset HaGdolah, tamper with a text edited and written by HaKadosh Baruch Hu? It's very difficult. But I elaborate on this today because this is the first example in the Chumash. Perek Yud Chai. There will be several others in the Chumash. Quite a number of them in Sefer Bamidbar. Next week I'll show you one or two of them in Sefer Bamidbar, and then we go back to the text itself. But I wanted you to know this because it's not well known, and it's incredibly important when you come across those texts as to what happened to them. Rashi always alerts us what should have said, and now I'm telling you what was changed. What was changed. Stop here. No, absolutely not. This is a whole sentence. It should have said, Hashem Odenu I made on Abraham. The Kriya Niktiv, we know, is written one way. Everyone agrees. But there are those who told us, don't read it that way. Just the reading is, that's introduced by the Sofrim also. Don't read it that way. But they don't change the text. It's a big difference.